everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Ray Allen on the other side of the glass. And buckle those seatbelts. We got a lot of content for the next hour. Welcome to Buckmaster on Earth Day, this Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. We're in our 11th year, right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from KVOI.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Venture Real Estate and Property Management. And we begin this afternoon's program with breaking news about COVID. Scientists at Texas A&M University's Global Health Research Complex say they have detected a new COVID-19 variant that shows signs of a more contagious strain that causes more severe illness and appears to be resistant to antibodies. This new variant is being called BV1, named for the Brazos Valley origin in Texas. It was found during Texas A&M's routine coronavirus screening via a saliva sample in a young student who had mild cold-like symptoms. Dr. Michael Warraby is head of the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the University of Arizona. He specializes in the evolution of viruses. He's also the associate director of UA Bio 5 Institute, and it's very serendipitous, Dr. Warraby, to have you on the program today in light of this news. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well.
What do you make of this? There are a couple things that kind of jump out that seems pretty scary, and that is about more resistant to antibodies and more contagious. That scares the heck out of me anyway.
Well, it's good to put these things in the context of other variants that are already circulating. And what they did at Texas A&M is they sequenced the genome of the virus and then looked at mutations and found some mutations that have been found in other variants of concern around the world. They haven't actually grown the virus or done experiments to show that it's necessarily more severe in young people. But what they can do is compare certain mutations. So in the virus, the virus is studded. It's kind of like a golf ball with a bunch of golf tees sticking out from it, and those golf tees are the spike protein of the virus. That's the protein that the virus uses to stick to our cells and gain entry to them. And there are certain mutations that make those golf tees more sticky, like Velcro, better at sticking to cells, which makes the virus more transmissible. It can just get into more cells and produce more copies of itself. And there are some mutations in the spike protein that do allow for some degree of escape from antibodies produced from prior infection. So this virus has both of those features. But it's important to note that other variants that are circulating already, even in Tucson, have those same mutations. So this is just another example of something that we're already dealing with. So in Tucson, we're already dealing with variants that have some of these same mutations.
Michael, let me ask you, you have studied the great flu of 1918-1919, and from my understanding, the variants, the mutations in terms of severity moved on a scale downward. It seems like with COVID-19, Michael, the scale is upward. Could you explain this, please?
That is a really good question, Bill. And despite having some insight into the 1918 epidemic from actual patient samples that were collected during that time and have now been sequenced, we don't have nearly the same insight into what happened day by day, week by week, month by month, as we do for COVID-19. And there's kind of two things that can go on at the same time. You can have the virus potentially becoming more transmissible and even more severe, but at the same time, you have it infecting a greater and greater proportion of the population. And so once the virus has raced through the bulk of the population, even if all else being equal, the virus in 1918 had evolved to be more transmissible and slightly more severe like COVID-19 has, it still might not have shown up and looked like it was more severe, because once you're infected, you're much less likely to have a severe reaction. And so I think that's probably what was going on in 1918. There may indeed have been some evolution toward more severity, but the main impression that that you get over time is of a virus that's becoming less severe, but that's not because of changes to the virus. That's because of protection due to immunity in a greater and greater proportion of the human population.
Michael, is COVID-19 becoming more severe generally?
Generally, it is. So over the last several months in the U.S., we have seen this variant B117 that originated, we think, in the UK, go from not being not being present here at all, probably in October, to now being the dominant variant across the whole country. And we know from very careful studies in the UK that that virus is about 60% more transmissible. And if you get it, it's about 67% more likely to land you in the hospital or kill you. And so if you multiply those two numbers together, it infects more people. And of those people, it puts more of them in the hospital. It's really two times more severe than the variants that we were dealing with last fall. So that has happened, and that is an ongoing concern. But at the same time, like I mentioned with the 1918 flu, we've got more and more immunity, not just because people have been infected, but because we've been able to roll out this vaccine in record time. If we hadn't done that, if we didn't have many of our most vulnerable people vaccinated at the stage where this new variant was emerging, it would have been a fourth wave and probably more devastating than anything we've seen even in January and February. So we're very lucky that we've got the vaccine to blunt the effects of this new variant.
So let's put this into perspective, Dr. Michael Werribee. We have about 80% of the most vulnerable citizens over 65 who have at least had one shot. They've, or in many cases, they've had both of the shots. So we're going to, the surveys are showing about 20% of that age group, for whatever reason, will not get the shot. Now the heavy lifting really begins, though. We've put 200 million doses out there in the vaccine in the arms of Americans. But the heavy lifting begins in this other group that is resistant for a myriad of reasons. Where does that put us in moving toward what is often called herd immunity?
So herd immunity, let's just sort of define it so we know what we're talking about here. Herd immunity is the level, essentially the percentage of the population that needs to have immunity from natural infection or vaccination for the virus to have a difficult time spreading locally. And that number is not fixed. if we had been dealing with the variants of the virus that we saw in January and February of 2020 that were less transmissible and better controlled by the antibody responses than the current variants, we would have to probably have something like 70% of the population with immunity to have a herd immunity effect of really limiting local transmission. With these new variants, that number is probably closer to 90. And what that means is we need to actually prepare for a world where we never reach herd immunity. We might not, in fact, it's very unlikely that we'll get to the point where we actually stamp this pandemic out completely. We're ahead of most of the world in terms of our rollout of vaccines. Many, many countries across the world will not have full vaccination for many years, or at least several years from now. And so what I think is we're going to be dealing with this for the rest of our lifetimes, and it's going to become established as a new seasonal infection, just like influenza.
All right, let's talk more about that after we take the break. But right now I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. We all need comfort food, don't we, after the kind of year we've had? Find out what all the excitement is about and why more and more people are discovering Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. It's a delicate, light and tasty multi-layered pastry. You will not regret it. Try one Kringle and you will want another one. I also like their Danish coffee cake, which is also delicious and filled with all sorts of, they've got strawberry. I prefer the almond, but check it out. They're open right now. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for lunch. They open for breakfast, and my, they do a great breakfast up there. They're open at 6:30 in the morning. The website's monasdanishbakery.com, or just stop in right now at Mona's. Be right back on Buckmaster.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your health care by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks. A modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Welcome back to the Strains of Chicago, only the beginning, and we're really just getting started here today on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Michael Warraby is with us, the head of the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology. He specializes in the evolution of viruses. He's also the associate director of the UA Biosphere 2 Institute. Very serendipitous to have Dr. Warraby on the program today. As more information comes out about variants, we were talking before the break that we'll probably have to have, well, that this is not going away, COVID-19. So some kind of a booster shot would be in order. Is that what you're thinking in the fall, Dr. Warraby?
I'm hoping that it will be later than the fall, the sort of 1 year timeline. I think the jury's still out that we could be good for actually years without needing another booster shot. And one thing that I did want to emphasize, I don't want to leave people with a sort of downer impression that we're going to be stuck in this pandemic lifestyle for the rest of our lives. Again, once everyone has had the virus for the first time or had the vaccine, we expect that this virus will be much, much less severe and will look a lot more like flu, which is in itself an important virus that kills sometimes up to 80,000 Americans in a year. But it will not be something that is going to be killing 500,000 Americans year in and year out.
Let's talk a little bit about, update us the last time you were with us a couple of months ago about the new swish and gargle COVID test, which seems so much more easier and acceptable than the swab up the nose. Is it gaining traction, Dr. Warraby?
Well, we've certainly rolled it out in a big way at the university, and we are now doing many, many thousands of tests per week with this swish gargle test. It does seem to be gaining a little bit of traction in other parts of the world, not so much in the States yet, and it's interesting. I think people just stick with what they're using, it does take a lot of work. If you're a clinical laboratory that is set up for the nasopharyngeal swab test, for example, it takes a lot of work to switch over to a new modality like swish gargle. We put that work in at the University of Arizona, and it's paid off. But I think a lot of other places are hesitant to do that, as you know, there's so many challenges to people's time and resources when they're dealing with the pandemic.
Going back to the vaccinations, I know Dr. Robbins, the head of the University of Arizona, is advocating, and I know this will be going before the Board of Regents because I think all three universities want a unified front on this idea that all students coming back to the University of Arizona in the fall should undergo vaccinations. Do you have an opinion on that, Michael?
I think it's definitely ideal that we get as many students and staff and faculty vaccinated as possible. What the best way to get to that point will be, I think, deserves some careful thought. And it may not be that a mandatory vaccination program is the best way to get there. It may be that incentivizing things with carrots rather than sticks would be the best approach. And so I'm kind of following that and will be interested to see which way the three universities go.
I want to talk a little bit about, we have visited in the past about, I've talked about my love of Canada, have gone up there many times. Canada is pretty much closed still to American tourists, and I know you have a background in British Columbia. They are really being hammered still with a third wave, aren't they, of COVID?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Early on in the pandemic, I was kind of looking up to British Columbia and comparing it to Arizona, and you know, they had really hardly any activity of the virus at all in the spring of 2020, and now it's just completely reversed. That they, with a smaller population, have many, many more cases per week than Arizona does with a larger population. And in particular, they have some of these concerning variants like P1, the Brazilian variant, that to connect back to the very first segment of our discussion today, that virus has the same mutations of concern that this BV1 virus in Texas has. And it really got amplified at Whistler, the ski resort just north of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's really sad, actually, to see where things stand in British Columbia now, where they did so well in the early part of the pandemic.
So Canada has had a lot of difficulty obtaining the vaccine supply. Was this a management issue that early on they did not allow for the manufacture of the vaccine in Canada?
Yeah, my understanding is that there really wasn't capacity for manufacturing some of these vaccines that have become the successful ones, and so Canada was at the mercy of the market. The federal government there in Canada is definitely taking a lot of heat for being behind the eight ball, and certainly behind the United States in terms of their vaccine rollout. And what they're doing there is really delaying by up to 4 months the first and second shots, which is, you know, I think it's probably a wise move. If you only have so much vaccine, probably better to get it in the arms of twice as many people with one dose in the sort of short and medium term. And so that is what's happening up there.
Before we wrap it up, you've been hearing along with that on social media, there seems to be... every imaginable excuse for not getting a vaccine. Some of these things are very laughable, but why do you think there is such hesitancy, Dr. Warraby, among a large percent of our population not to get the shot?
Yeah, I think what you hear most often is that people are hesitant to get it because of how quickly these vaccines were developed. And what I would say to that, if there are people listening who are in that sort of frame of mind, totally reasonable to sort of think about those sorts of things. But the parts of the process that were sped up were not the parts of the process that deal with the safety. And so the vaccine, the RNA vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, were actually developed, the actual immunogens were developed within days of the genome sequence of the virus being posted on January 11th, 2020. But then we had nearly a year of safety testing, and they go through three rounds, phase one, phase two, and phase three. Phase one is just to give to the vaccine to yep. a relatively small number of people to make sure there aren't any safety concerns in that small number of people.
Yes.
Not so much to look at the efficacy. Right up to phase three, which is 30 to 50,000 people. And I was actually one of the people who enrolled in the phase three trial.
Got to wrap it up. Got to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Dr. Michael Warraby from the University of Arizona, thank you very much. Great chatting with you again.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley and on the web at noblehops.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, the go-to place for all their amazing plants that they offer. 13 acres of these plants, trees, annuals, and more. This is going to be a beautiful weekend. The wind should die down a little bit by Saturday, so I don't know about you, but I'll probably be out in the garden, and if you're looking for some spring color, some things that will survive into the to the summertime, the people over at Green Things can certainly point you in the right direction. 51 years. Yep, that's it. They have been around and very knowledgeable. They're open daily, 3384 East River Road. Check out their website, greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business, zocalovillage.com. Zocalo Village, all that beautiful handmade furniture, lighting, Talavera pottery, antiques, lots of things, good things over at Zocalo Village. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the state capital of Arizona. Up to Phoenix we go, and State Representative Andrea D'Alessandro is with us, Democrat, representing District Number 2. Representative D'Alessandro, how are you?
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Doing real well. I know it's a busy day up at the Capitol. We haven't talked with you in a while. This session seems to be dragging on and on.
Yes. And Bill, I'm in the House and I'm voting from my office right now.
Okay.
And before us is Senate Bill 1457, which is abortion, unborn child, genetic abnormality. And we were delayed with our last bill that we could hear that. The Senate passed it earlier today. So it's a very emotional day, a very important day. I'm a member of Catholics for Choice, and many people think that this bill, you know, they want to go to the Supreme Court. But Bill, as a woman, as a human being, I cannot see our government getting in between a doctor and his patient, a woman and her doctor and her family. And in times of really hard decisions, this is, you know, a radical bill. And I'm just very disappointed it's going forward. It'll surely wind up in court. And so if I seem a little bit distracted, it's because we're actually voting right now. Senate Bill 1457.
Let me ask you, what is going on with the budget? Is that discussion in the near future or what?
No, in fact, this morning I listened to the Capital Times' morning scoop, and even J.D. Mester, the senator, said he doesn't even know what's going on with the budget there. Of course, we have the governor's budget, and one thing I'm strongly against is any tax cuts. You know, I always say Arizona is the tale of two cities. You know, this is my ninth year in the legislature, previously in the House, and then nearly 7 years in the Senate. Every single agency that I come and encounter, that they should be improving the infrastructure. So many of our people were out of work and needed unemployment, and our information technology is from the 1980s. Try to get someone who can program that. Try to get someone who can revise that. We need our prisons have horrible health care. They have it privatized, and so many people have died from COVID. We even lost a warden in Yuma. Every single agency, you know, I'm on natural resources, energy and water, and our agriculture department, they need inspectors to inspect places where cannabis is sold. They also, you know, I have a rural district. And people say, is your district urban, suburban, or rural? And I say, yes. And we even have the Department of Agriculture. Anytime a shipment full of cattle or horses are being loaded for sale, we have to have branding inspectors. So And if we don't have them, the sales can't go. So it hurts. We need improved infrastructure. This is no time for a tax cut. And we have so many opportunities. I'm blown away with the University of Arizona and ASU, both their response to the pandemic and to testing and to research that's going on. This is not the time for tax cuts. This is the time to invest in education, to invest in infrastructure, and to address some of the climate change issues that we're facing. And our water infrastructure needs to be improved because we've been in a drought for so long.
Let me ask you, getting some kind of a gauge on where this is going with the budget, I can remember, it's been a while, but where they actually stopped the clock on June 30th, we did not have a budget in Arizona. And I can remember that they stopped the clock basically because the budget discussions and the budget voting went into to actually July 1st. We may be facing that again.
This is very possible. J.D. Mesnard this morning at an event said it will finish it this year, meaning this fiscal year. But my guess is Friday, June 11th, but I suspect that it could go longer. And I have shared that same story, Bill, that we'll put coverings over the clocks.
Yeah,
I hope not, because it'll be very hot in Phoenix then.
Yes, I hope it doesn't go that long, but it just seems like there have been so many distractions with this particular legislature, Andrea.
Right. You know, definitely, and even our you know, in these days of cyber terrorism, we need to harden every aspect of our state government. And others just don't get it. They are helping on tax cuts. And, you know, everybody loves tax cuts. Oh, that's wonderful. But what I ask my voters to do, my residents, think about how it's going to impact you. You know, and there were a lot of people out of work, and they spent hours and hours trying to get tested, to get vaccines, to get, get the benefits that they deserve under the federal programs for unemployment, which came through the Arizona programs. And it's just, we need to invest in Arizona, you know, and who gets the tax cuts, Bill? Not the people I represent generally. It's the top 1%, the people who are doing really well. And there is, with you mentioning covering the clocks, it reminds me about a decade ago when Paula Abad was a senator. And I believe she was in one of the years that they had to cover the clocks. And they were interested in a flat tax. And there are rumors going around that there is another proposal for flat tax. And what happens is the people, the average people and people at the lower end of the economic ladder, they get to pay more and the fat cats get to pay less at a time when we need infrastructure for dams, for bridges, for roads, and for you probably hear a lot of your guests speak about the lack of broadband in every
right.
part of the state. It's crucial to business and it's crucial to education.
Representative D'Alessandro, have to run. Andrea D'Alessandro, yes. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Bill. Stay safe.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Representative D'Alessandro, Democrat District 2. We will be right back in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on this Thursday afternoon.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico is ready. The folks over there are so ready to welcome you with open arms. We send over the years and have sent so many of our Tucson listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Well, New Mexico's open for tourism right now, so you can start your planning and then get in the car and take the trip, 3-hour drive approximately, to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where I can guarantee it will be cooler because of the elevation of 5,000 to 7,000 feet. The place to start, southwestnewmexico.org. Great places to stay and all sorts of things to do in Silver City. Sports journalist Anthony Jamino with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Anthony has been writing about University of Arizona sports and athletics for a long time, starting with the football beat for the Star and when the Citizen was still in business. Anthony is senior editor for Lindy's Football Annuals. He's co-founder of what has become a very popular local blog on sports. It's called AllSportsTucson.com, and his book is still around too. That book is 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Do, Know and Do Before They Die. It's about Arizona basketball. How are you, AG?
Doing good, Bill. Thanks.
I mean, so much has gone on. You've got a new head basketball coach with Tommy Lloyd. This on the heels of a new football coach, Jed Fish. So I think it's safe to say that UA Athletics, at least with the two marquee programs, is really entering a new era. There's been a lot of change, and it's happened pretty darn fast, hasn't it?
It seems like it's coming right after another. I mean, it's a total hit the reset button kind of situation. And, you know, while that was going on, the Arizona women's basketball team was making an unprecedented run to the national title. There's a lot going on. We've still got some really good postseasons left in the next month or two with softball and baseball as well. So it's a very interesting time in Arizona athletics, and you know, I'm really looking forward to tomorrow's football scrimmage. I don't think there's been as much interest in a spring game for Arizona football? I mean, I really can't even remember. And a lot of that has to do with new coach, Jed Fish, but also everybody of two of the most favorite Wildcats of all time coming back as honorary coaches, Rob Gronkowski and Teddy Bruschi. I mean, that's just, and it speaks to how Jed Fish in the first 4 or 5 months or whatever it's been has just really hit all the right notes in terms of generating excitement and connecting with the community and all the things you have to do before you start playing games and maybe you start taking some losses. But that's down the road. For now, I think he's like batting 1,000. I think he's done everything right.
And that game is, you said tomorrow. I was thinking, is the game on Friday? No, it's
Saturday. Yes. Saturday.
We're all thinking, yeah, I wish today was Friday.
Right?
I wish today was Friday. But no, the game, and it should be pretty good time of day, noon, not too hot yet in the season. So I think it's going to be fun. And one thing that really has impressed me about Coach Fish, he's really been open and transparent. The practices, and I think they had a little scrimmage even last weekend that was open to the public.
Right, at the stadium. And, you know, as a, we media guys love our open practices. And it's really not a selfish thing. And I think it's something that anybody who's interested in Arizona football should be thrilled about, because that's where you really get, you get story ideas, you pick up little anecdotes. And then when people ask you, well, how does that third string quarterback look? Well, you might have a little bit of an idea because you've actually seen that third string quarterback. And that was really an issue in the last several years with closed practices and such. And, you know, there's no good information to get out there. And so when you don't have any of that to kind of generate some interest, well, that's why you saw, 30,000 people at the stadium instead of 50,000. And I think it's all, all of what Jed Fish has done has helped coordinate increased interest in the program and what he's doing and how his players look. And if he can translate that into ticket sales, he will have done part one of his job.
I think Coach Tomey is smiling up in heaven. I think he'd be very pleased with the direction of the program and some of the Tomey bloodlines that are associated with the program.
Right. I mean, I know, same with the basketball coach. There were a lot of people who wanted an alum as a head coach. Well, that's great. Sometimes that works if it's the right person. But if it's not an alum, then you do what Jed Fish has done and you involve all the ex-Wildcats, no matter what era they are. We see on his staff, he has Ricky Hundley, who's, still, I think in my mind, probably the greatest Arizona player of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you bring in Chuck Ciso, who spanned Larry Smith and Coach Tomey. You could make a case maybe he's the number two Wildcat of all time. And then he has Teddy Bruschi in an advisory role. You could make a case he's maybe the number three Wildcat of all time. All college football Hall of Fame members. That's pretty impressive.
I think AG, yeah. All bets are off, though, on where to pick this team, because I'm sure the prognosticators will pick them in last or very close to last. However, I don't know, when you get an emotional factor and a team cranked up, anything can happen.
Well, that's one way to look at it, Bill. we're in the process of doing the Lindy's magazines and, mm-hmm. and doing all the preseason predictions and such, and haven't gotten into the super nitty gritty of where everybody's going to rank and all that kind of thing. But, Arizona has a 12-game losing streak.
Right.
They don't have a bunch of identifiable, that guy's a surefire first team all Pac-12 player. They don't have a lot of those guys. they're unsettled at quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not. They have a difficult schedule. I mean, their non-conference schedule is one of their most difficult in years, even though there's not like a big power conference team. He opened with BYU in Vegas.
Ooh.
And BYU's essentially a kind of a power conference team as an independent, even though they lose a ton of their star power from last year, which was a great season. And then they come back home and play San Diego State.
Ooh.
San Diego State makes a habit out of beating Pac-12 schools.
Yep.
And they're traditionally one of the best programs in the Mountain West Conference. So that's a difficult schedule. Then you open your conference season against Oregon.
Oh, boy.
So it's all these things line up as to a potentially very difficult year. But I think, you know, let's set the expectations bar fairly low. I think people want to see some progress, see the guys play hard, see them play together, and all those kind of things. So that's part two of the Jed Fish challenge, is if those losses start piling up,
right,
how do you keep the good vibes going?
Yes.
You keep the team together. And that's, you know, he's never been a head coach before. That's going to be a challenge, because it's all great in the off season. We're still honeymooning. But what happens when you're 1-3 or 1-4 and you've lost your first couple of conference games? Now what? Are your players still listening to you? Do the fans still want to come out to the stadium to see what you got going on? But we can discuss that months down the road.
Yep.
For now, people will be, you know, that game on Saturday, not tomorrow, is will be on TV for people who don't want to go down there. So I think it'll be fun. They're going to make it a party, and that's great. I think that's how they should market Arizona football, as a fun brand of entertainment.
Let me ask you a quick logistics question. Will there be a limit, or what kind of seating do they have out at the stadium?
Yeah, I don't know the numbers on that. There will be a limit. Traditionally, this hasn't been an issue at all.
No.
I mean, it might be a little more this time. I don't have a hard number on it. But, you know, there will be, I'm sure, protocols in place and such. But people are encouraged to go out.
Is the
they can root for Team Gronk or Team Brewski.
The season itself, next season, you're not hearing about fan limits or anything like that yet?
Still probably too far down the road. Some parts of the country, not surprisingly, in the SEC, like in Alabama, it's like they've already said, we're open, we're at capacity. They had last weekend, I believe, about 47,000 at their spring game.
Wow.
Which I believe may be the largest event anybody's had in the country in the last 12 months, 13 months.
Got to wrap it up. Got to wrap it up, yeah. AG. Thank you. Always a pleasure, Anthony Jimeno, and we'll see you out at the stadium at noon on Saturday. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line guests presented courtesy Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On behalf of my engineer producer, good to see my friend Ray Allen on the other side of the glass. Bill Buckmaster wishing you a great afternoon.